Our modern Western culture places little to no value on the power of our nightly dreams to inspire, shift, and reorganize our lives. This podcast demands a deep reconsideration of the role dreams play on our path to a more vital and meaningful life. The following is living proof of the life-affirming power of dreams to affect change and redirect the trajectory of our inner and outer lives. These are the dreams that shape us.
In our previous episode, our guest Bob Haas shared with us how a person he did not know had a dream that featured his name and location, and the person felt moved to contact him, totally out of the blue. And what they had to share with him from their dream turned out to be exactly what Bob needed to hear to make a big decision. The dream referred to that communication line between him and a seeming stranger as the body unconscious network. The body unconscious network. The way Bob explains it, there is a sort of internet that connects us all in the root level of our minds. When we sleep and dream, that network gets real active. You might say that it's humanity's soul network. In this podcast, we have brought you fascinating examples of the sort of information that can come to us in our dreams. But for this episode, the body unconscious takes on new meaning because the wife of our guest, Christian Garricky, came to my co-host Steve in his dream. And one thing led to another. Christian is our guest. But Suzanne is Christian's deceased wife. She's the one who came to Steve in his dream, and she was unknown to him at the time. She was also a big believer in the power of dreams. Now, we don't know if it was her spirit or what that led us to Christian, but once you hear his story, we think you'll agree. There's good reason why something in the dream world wanted him on our show. I'm Jason DeBord, and I'll return after the interview with final thoughts for you. Enjoy.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Dreams That Shape Us podcast. I'm Steve Ernenwine, and I'm here with my colleague, Christian Garricky. So welcome. Thank you so much for being here today with me.
I'm glad to be here.
Awesome. So we have a pretty close to the chest story for you today. We're going to be speaking about a dream that Christian received the day before his wife had passed away. Well, we're coming up on the anniversary of it, right?
Yes, it'll be. It was in 2019, and so this will be the third year now, July 1st.
Wow. Yeah, I was just thinking about that the other day. I thought it was pretty synchronous that this was finally able to kind of work out now. So I hope that honors her and honors you in some way.
Thank you.
So yeah, we're going to explore this really sweet and tender dream that he had and talk a lot about, I think, the relationship that one of the aspects of the dreams has with death. And we're going to just see how this story unfolds. So I actually reached out to Christian because of a dream that I had last fall. I had been considering reaching out to him to get him on the podcast because he's a very active member of the IASD Facebook group. And we've had quite a few discussions back and forth here and there over the last few years. And I've always just appreciated your contribution to dreams and to conversation on the Facebook platform that IASD has. And I've been mulling over contacting you for a couple months, but we had a bunch of interviews already in place, and I don't like getting too far ahead of myself. Otherwise, I get all stressed out with how many interviews I have on my plate. But yeah, then I had a dream. I didn't even write this down because it was such a short clip of a dream. But I I feel like I remember just being outside in this space, and I don't remember if somebody came up to me and said the name. It was either Susan or Suzanne Garricky, but I can't remember exactly how it was said now because I didn't write it down. But I almost feel like it was Susan, but I could have just misheard it in the dream. And that's when you had commented on a random Facebook post that I had put up, and I was like, oh yeah, by the way, actually, I had this dream, and I don't know if this name means anything to you, but yeah, then I find out that your late wife's name was Suzanne, and it almost felt like to me that something or someone was trying to get me to finally pull the trigger on getting you to share a story. So
I was just astounded when you made that comment about the dream. That was just amazing to hear.
Yeah, it was just. I'm like, I wonder if this name means anything to him. And then, yeah, sure enough, like, it was your wife's name. It was wild.
You know, it really feels like one of the things that only happen in the dream world, where there's connections that occur through modes that we have no comprehension of, but it's incredibly meaningful.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Yeah, anytime that I think like I have any understanding of like the mechanics of how the dreams work, it's just like I hear a story about something like kind of similar to this where it's just like, well, how do you explain that? It's just like,
I have a fairly clear understanding of much of how dreaming works. And then there is an enormous amount where I just am puzzled by what's going on. I acknowledge that it happens. Various communications through time and space, but I have no idea how that goes on, but it clearly does, even though a good chunk of dreaming I think I grasp, but there's just an enormous part that I'm just don't understand. And I don't think anybody else does either.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Seems like a lot of people have some pretty solid ideas about what it means, but I just feel like if you're being true to honoring the dream, it is constantly just throwing it back in your face that there's no way you can ever pin it down.
I completely agree. I find that those that have one explanation of what dreams do or don't do, or we don't even dream, or they are totally meaningless, the diversity that occurs in dreams, the multi levels of meaning, suggests to me that there's many, many aspects and causes and purposes of dreaming. And to be on just one track, I think, is the wrong track.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, man. All right. So I think to begin, I was just going to ask you if you could share with us a little bit about Suzanne and give us an idea of who she was. And I don't know if you wanted to tell us a little bit about how you guys met. And I know you had said you were together for about 40 years. That's
correct.
That's a whole lot of life together.
Yes, it is.
So I just wanted to open up a little bit of a space for you to talk about her and share a little bit about her.
Thank you. I met Suzanne when I was an undergraduate in anthropology at Sonoma State University, and we were both anthropology students, and we, that must have been 1977 or so that we met, maybe early 78 at the latest. And we both went on to careers in a field called cultural resources management. And we both did graduate work at Sonoma State in anthropology, cultural resources management. And we often worked together. We were both in the same fields. And probably some of the best experiences I had was when she and I had our own small consulting firm. She was an incredible writer. She controlled the English language. And not surprisingly, she was the editor for the Anthropological Study Center, where we spent much of our career at. And we both did archaeology, through history, ethnography throughout California. And a real interesting aspect of our relationship was that when I first met her, she had stopped doing this, but she had kept a dream journal for years and years, and she'd been very interested. And she had this huge journal, and she'd actually completely indexed it. And it was just kind of astounding. And I had no interest in dreams whatsoever at that time. Oh, I thought, you know, dreams, blah, blah, blah. I wasn't a dreamer. I don't recall dreams. And then many years later, all of a sudden, I became avidly interested in dreaming. And she and I would get up in the mornings and talk about our dreams. We'd go to dream groups together. And we very, very actively engaged in the world of dreaming and what the experience was all about.
Wow, that's so beautiful. I think that's really interesting. I was going to ask you if she shared the same passion for dreams as you do.
You know, she did before we met, and then somewhere along the way it had calmed down, shall we say. And then towards the last, oh my God, when did 10, about 15 years ago, I started getting interested in dreams, and once I did, she became back, revived her interest in dreams, and we very actively went to dream groups, dream workshops, the ISD. We did a lot of Jeremy Taylor things together, and it was nice. just really enjoyable and amazing to have somebody that you can get up with in the morning and say, I had this dream last night. What do you think? And I'm doing that with my current partner too. And it's just fantastic to be able to do that, to share those dreams.
Oh, I bet. That's really cool. Yeah, my partner isn't as hardcore into them as I am, but she loves sharing them with me when she has them. And same with my son now that he's 5 and a half now, he's able to communicate what he's experiencing in his dreams better than he had been before. And that's really cool to be able to start to have a more of a dialogue with him about his dreams in that way too. So
yeah, that's absolutely dynamite. Yeah.
I'm so glad that it stoked the fire back in her too when you started getting into him. That's gotta be really cool. So to move forward from there, do you want to talk a little bit about the Parkinson's that she was dealing with and leading up to the time around when she passed?
Yeah, well, Parkinson's is a very long-term, devastating disease, and it... early hints of it as much as like 20 years ago, and then about 10 years before she passed, she started getting increasingly degenerative, both in physical and mental capabilities, and it eventually leads to where you don't have any control over your body, and you're in a state of dementia where you're fairly well doing massive hallucination and having to be taken care of all the time. It's really quite a struggle all around. And we did the best we could. We really hung in there with it and tried to make life as good as we possibly could. And by the time she passed, it was probably a relief for both of us.
Yeah. Yeah, my boss, his father passed, I think, 2 years ago. The same thing. Uh-huh. And, we have like a very interesting boss employee relationship where I did a lot of work helping out his family during that time, and he would ask me to go over and he would say something like, Dad fell, can you go and I'm not around, can you go and help get him back up in his chair? And so there were things like that so I kind of have a pretty vivid understanding of what that really looks like in a day-to-day situation. So yeah, it's really kind of sad to see over time. And I only had a few years with him of experiencing what that was like. And I would ask stories about what he was like before, and it's just like, man, to see him like this now was really sad to see, but yeah.
Yes, it is. It's very sad to see an incredibly bright mind and physically active person slowly fade away. And our journey was greatly helped by incredibly understanding neighbors, relatives, and friends who helped us out quite a bit. And it made a real difference in easing the difficulties of it.
Yeah, I bet. So yeah, I think at this point, do you want to share the dream that you had the day before she went?
Well, yeah, I'd be glad to. I'd like to mention just a touch of background to the dream.
Yeah, please do.
I did graduate work in anthropology, and then once I became interested in doing dreams, I wanted to go however one goes as a professional in the world of working with dreams. I wanted to write, I wanted to research, teach, and I've been doing all of those things. So my going to graduate school in psychology did accomplish what I was seeking to do. And as one of the requirements of the graduate work, we had a choice of doing a project, a thesis, or a journal article. And I decided that I wanted to do a journal article, and it was on the theme of animals in our dreams. And I have since graduated, and I've written the article. It was strictly for school, but it was for the Animals and Society Journal. We had to follow their format. And one of the things I had to do as part of the assignment was find an article that I would use as a template to guide mine. And the one I chose was on the relationship between birds and spirits of the dead by C.M. Moorman, and it was in the Society and Animals Journal. So I had read this background about birds and relationship to death. And there's one, it's an archetype. It's around the world. And it's a very common experience that people have birds visiting them before dying, or birds visiting people close to them. And in this case, I had a bird visit me. And here's the dream. This was either the night before Suzanne passed or the very morning of Suzanne's passing. The dream is, quote, "I see a large bird with its back to me and its wings spread out, as if preparing to fly away from me. The bird is in the left of my field of vision. Later, I see several horses all facing left, looking in the direction of where the bird would have been." End of dream. And then I do have some comments on that dream, if you'd be up for them.
Yeah, please. Let's look at it.
Okay. So I keep an extensive dream journal, and in the journal I noted as part of this dream, I said that the bird representing spirit flying into the heavens seems pretty clear to me. And the away from me is my losing Suzanne. Mm-hmm. Also, Suzanne and I are real fans of watching birds and have often oohed and awed over egrets and herons, big birds. I think it was probably a great blue heron that the bird was in my dream, but I really don't know. One of our favorite walks was to go out to the Petaluma Bioponds and Schoenberger Park with all their bird life. Interestingly enough, on our last walk, well, I pushed her in a transport chair, we counted 24 swans. Have never seen even close to that number out there before. And swans have a variety of symbolic connection to death. A day or two before this dream, our niece visited us in the hospital, and she left me with a lovely bookmark that depicts a colorful herd of horses galloping to the left with the words, always run in the direction of your dreams. And that's, I think, where the horses in my dreams came from. They're all facing left and looking at where the bird would have been.
Yeah, definitely.
So those are some comments I made to myself as I after I had the dream.
Yeah, I think that all just feels so spot on. Yeah, I mean, the imagery of watching the big bird spread its wings and fly away from you is like, that's pretty potent stuff.
it was a very moving dream. I was both impressed by it. I was very taken by it. It was really, really incredibly sensitive. And somehow it felt very comforting and reassuring. I really felt a comfort out of that dream.
Yeah. Yeah, I think dreams have a really special way of doing that where the loss of your wife is obviously a very incredibly emotionally hard thing to bear, but for the dream to so tenderly give an image of, I mean, it probably is still a hard image to experience, but there is like a richness in it and there's a sweetness there as well that I think helps definitely with the comfort factor for sure.
Something I've noticed in doing dream work is that people seem to get a real understanding and comfort out of a dream when they realize what the dream is meaning, and it's been something that's been both bothering and puzzling them. And somehow knowing that it was in the dream and that's what the dream was saying, almost regardless of what the dream is saying, but the fact that the dream touched on it seems to be of great comfort to people, and they really seem to appreciate it in addressing the difficulties in their life.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Yeah, it seems like I was actually just listening to an episode that Catherine Bell just did on her radio show. I don't remember what the woman's name was. It was the most recent one. Catherine had asked her, you know, why do we find so much comfort in some of these hard images and dreams? And I think the woman said something like, well, they tell us the truth.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And there's something even in hard dreams that is so comforting about receiving like actual truth about the situation. And so here we have like, this is the truth of the situation. Like she is leaving. But the fact that it's able to present it to you in a way that's deeply meaningful to you. I mean, this is touching base on not only the information that you already know about birds in the afterlife, but bird watching was something that you two really enjoyed.
Uh-huh.
And it's making it very personal for you. I think that there is a lot of comfort in that. It's seeing that it not only like is helping you to understand the truth of what's happening, but also like presenting it to you in a way that's deeply meaningful, that shows that it knows you and that it cares about you. And I think that's really kind of sweet.
Regardless of how dreams come forth from us or enter us, in the end, the dream is within us one way or another, and we are experiencing the truth from ourselves. It's not coming from somewhere else necessarily, though people will have different views of what a dream is doing, but I find that the truth is coming from me, and it is my own grappling and understanding of the world that I'm dealing with. I'm not having to listen to somebody else tell me how I think the world should be or what is going on. I'm coming to the truth through my own mode, my own self.
Yes. Yeah, thank you for saying that. That's like one of the biggest reasons why I love dreams and why I rely on them so deeply, because it feels like it's the deepest affirmation that you can receive from someplace so much deeper inside of you that feels like it has connection to truth.
Absolutely. And it has, depending on a dream, affects everybody differently. We all have our different experiences with dreams. My current partner, Ellery, she has a dream that tells her to do something with her life. She does it. That's all there is to it. She does it. And it's just astounding to see. I have a real different experience. I don't have really dreams tell me anything in terms of do this or do that, but my dreams consistently say, Christian, you are not paying enough attention to X, Y, or Z. And sure enough, there's something going on in my life and I'm just really not focusing on it, and I need to deal with it. And I'm not even ignoring it. I'm just not really aware of it. And the dream will make me clearly aware that I have an issue of some kind that I need to address. And then I start paying attention. I go, oh, yeah, okay. Gee, thanks. And I'll take action on that. But it's just, these are not, just two examples of the different modes that people have and how they respond to their dreams and what their dreams are doing for them and to them.
Yeah, that's awesome. Wow. Real quick, I don't remember if when you were just relaying your notes on the situation, if you had mentioned about the bookmark you received. I think you did, right?
Oh, yeah. I'll mention it again. A day or two before the dream, our niece visited us in the hospital, and she left me a lovely bookmark. It depicts a colorful herd of horses galloping to the left with the words, "Always run in the direction of your dreams." And I still have that bookmark.
Nice. Yeah. Okay. So I just wanted to speak to that synchronicity real quick, because I thought it was really kind of amazing the way that had happened and how the dream seemed to utilize that for you.
Uh-huh.
And do you see this as like a message? Because it gets tied into the dream. Do you feel like the dream used that and maybe in some other worldly way, Suzanne wanted that to be part of the dream for you?
You know,
as a message from her to you?
That could very well be. How can I phrase this? I have absolutely no doubt that the dream took that experience of the bookmark and used it in the dream itself. And one of the things that I did for the last 2.5 to 3 weeks of her life, Suzanne was basically in a coma and was not cognizant of what was going on around the world. But I told her everything that was going on. I would talk at length about what was going on in the world and what was happening. And I approached it in the sense of, I don't know if you can understand me or not, but I suspect somewhere inside there, you're hearing me. And so I would have told her about the bookmark, about our niece visiting. I would have read the bookmark to her, described it to her. And I wouldn't be surprised in the slightest that somehow we connected on whatever realm we connected in these kinds of things. And it was part of the dream, coming both from the bookmark as day residue, but also coming from Suzanne thinking about it. And the horses, to me, we all have different ideas of what things mean in dreams, what the mm-hmm. symbols are. But the horses for me are usually high energy in the sense of a pun on the word horsepower. And so take the energies we have and use them to pursue our dreams, whether they're in this world or some other world.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, I mean, looking at it when I was getting ready for the interview, I just thought that phrase was just so beautiful, like always run in the direction of your dreams. And it just, especially after just now hearing that she was pretty active with dreaming, really enjoyed it also. to me, it was like, you know, most people might read that as like the cliche of like, you know, running the, you know, chase your dreams. But I imagine for you, it's far more of a tender encouragement to really be with your personal dreams and to follow them out. And
really that's exactly how I took it. As the dreams that I experience on a nightly basis, and those are the dreams that I want to be following.
Yeah, that's really, really sweet. So we're just about at the 3-year anniversary. Have you had any dreams involving her, or any dreams that you feel like might have been like a visitation that you've had the last couple of years?
Yes, I've definitely had, I'd have to go back through my dream journal, but I've definitely had dreams over time that were clearly Suzanne in the dream. I don't think they were visitation dreams, though I wouldn't say that they weren't visitation dreams, but it just didn't really feel that way. But it was clearly Suzanne in the dreams, and I think a lot of it had to do with my coming to an understanding that she really had passed on, and that I needed to move on somewhere along the way, but that she was also still deep within me, and that it was going to be—it's part of one's life forever. The experience of somebody, even if it's for a short time, but somebody you've loved and lived with for 40 years, that doesn't go away. That's just there. And it's going to be undoubtedly coming up in my dreams. And it has several times, and it's not happening much anymore, but I have somewhat moved on. I do have a new relationship. Life continues. And, you know, that's a feeling that I also got from that dream I had with the bird about the horses, that the horses represent a life, a vitality, and one needs to keep on going. One just can't stop and just because a part of life has gone away, one still needs to keep on going.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think one of the things that I came across recently about grief was that, you know, it's not something that you just get over. It's something that you have to make room for. I mean, you can push that that away if you really want to. I don't know to what end, but if you're willing to sit with your grief in that way, that you make room for it and it becomes a living experience for you, then I almost feel like, I don't know, a lot of people think, well, if I grieve the loss of my loved one, then, you know, are they gone then? Like, if I just get happy, like, a lot of people, it seems like they think that by holding on to their grief and not processing it or not metabolizing it, that somehow they're not going to feel the loss anymore, and they're going to think that they've totally lost them. But I think that grief, like you said, it doesn't go away in that way that we think that it will. And that by having a relationship with your grief, you actually continue to have a relationship with them, because being in relationship with that grief is continuing your relationship with them in a way. Do you feel like that's honest? Do you think that's an honest assessment?
Yeah, I don't. I think if you try to push your grief away or say, I don't want this experience, or I'm just going to ignore all this, it'll come back in some other way and come. It'll rise again in, I think, in a, I'm going to say, a negative way. It's going to like hit you harder later on. I still live in the house that we had together. I go for walks in the same neighborhoods and the same parks and everything. And it is just so common for me to go, oh yeah, I remember walking with Suzanne here. This was such a nice place for us to go walk our dog together. Or this was such a great place to go see birds and things like that. And I just sort of live with that, acknowledge it, and go on. And I kind of reflect on what those really positive experiences were and how nice it was to have that in my life.
Yeah, that's really sweet. Death is definitely tricky, and especially in our culture, we're so phobic of it that I don't know why it's so hard for most people to have conversations like this about death. I think they're so necessary to have because I mean we had an episode I think last year with Laurel Clark. I'm pretty sure you know her, right?
Oh, I know Laurel. Yeah.
Yeah, she shared this amazing story of the passing of her husband, and she said that one of the hardest things about it is that, you know, if she ever brings up John, a lot of people get so uncomfortable about it right away that they want to like change the subject, or because it's almost like they expect that it's going to be too hard for her to talk about. But she's like, I want to talk about him. Like he's such an important part of my life and who I am, that to have people like not want to talk about it makes me feel really bad. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, we live in such a fast-paced culture and such a hedonistic culture. We don't slow down. We don't just, you know, silence is just like a devastating thing for most people. And yeah, to deal with the ultimate silence of death, I think that's something that people just don't want to acknowledge. And it's becoming clear to me, I'm 72 now, I'm clearly in the last whatever years of my life, be it the last quarter, last decade, or whatever, it's clearly there coming up. And I realized that I actually need to kind of somewhat prepare for it and deal with things so that I'm not just leaving a mess behind. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking about what do I do with what I have, and what do I do with my relationships to my siblings and to my current partner and friends, and how do I go about doing this? And I'm not hoping to have to deal with this in the near future, but it's become really obvious to me that this is coming up, and it's just something that we have to accept. And I think the more we work with it, the better off we're going to be, and it's going to be an easier experience.
Yeah, I really agree with that. And I almost feel like the act of working with our dreams is constantly, I don't know about you, but death is always such like a prominent symbol in a lot of my dreams, that I feel like just the act of doing dream work or being in connection with your dreams, that you inevitably develop more of a healthy relationship with death in general. I don't know how you feel about that, or if you have any comments on that also.
I really like James Hillman when I can understand him. And one of the things that really struck me, he has a book called Dreams in the Underworld, and he talks about how what our dreams are to a large degree preparation for dying. And he says, pay real attention to your dreams and you'll find that they always have a descending aspect to them. Somewhere in the dream, one is descending, as if descending into the underworld. And he talks about how the dreams are preparation for dying, in that the afterworld is closer to the dream world than anything else that we can possibly imagine. And we actually spend a good chunk of our life preparing for moving on. Whether this is really what's happening or not, I don't know. But I was really taken by the ideas that he presented in that, and that the afterlife is closest to the dream world, is closer to the dream world than anything that we have in our waking life.
Yeah, that really hits me in like a really interesting spot. I mean, it feels really true to me just based on how the 17 years that I've been doing dream work has gone. It feels like it's just slowly and methodically over time been trying to get me in a mindset where death is more of an ally or like a companion than it is this big scary thing that I put all kinds of armor and energy against having to consider or go into.
You know, Carlos Castaneda says death is always sitting on our left shoulder, so we might as well get used to it.
Oh, I love that. That's awesome. Yeah, it's I mean, as the old adage says, like, you know, tomorrow's never promised anybody. So
for sure.
It's something that we can conveniently not think about sometimes, but it really is always there, always present, just like birth is. Because in the same way, like birth and life and that kind of newness is also very present in dreams. Also, it just seems to really help us be in deep relationship with all the facets of life. And I just think it's really, really something. The way dreams, they do that all the time. They just, I could gush forever about them.
You know, I'm just such an absolute fan of people working with their dreams. And one of the things that I'm most interested in is promoting dreams for people who just generally don't even think about, you know, what are my dreams? You know, I have them, but so what? But anytime a neighbor or a friend says, hey, I had this dream. What do you think it means? I'm immediately willing to jump in and work with them whatever way they want to discuss a dream. So I do it. I do it through my my Facebook activity and various friends, both strictly Facebook friends and in physical life friends. I'm very responsive to that. But also, I've had like neighbors come and say, you know, I know you're interested in dreams. Could you recommend a book? And I had this dream the other night. What do you, you know, I just got a call from a really good friend who said, hey, I really need to talk about this dream I had. Now, he's a psychologist, and so he's really into dreams also. But I just immediately, yes, let's talk about it. If somebody wants to talk about a dream and wants to understand them, I'm there to help and try to do my best for that person to understand their dream, not for me to interpret it or for me to understand it, but for them to grasp what the dream is about.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's pretty much exactly why Jason and I started doing this podcast, was how can we showcase how meaningful, how deeply meaningful dreams have been for people in a way that by the time you get to the end of the episode, you're like, okay, that sounds amazing. I can't believe like how powerful or beautiful or moving or transformative or whatever the word is that you could associate with that particular story. Like I need that in my life. Like that just, you know, sells me on it completely. So that's essentially like why we've been doing this podcast and in the way that we've been doing it. Like we're so story centric here, just to get the whole story of the person's life and, you know, then when how the dream comes into it and just kind of intersects their life and then what happens afterwards. We want to see like how that actually works in the person's life. And yeah, it's been really amazing to share these stories and to have a platform where, you know, we're not just like talking open-endedly about dreams. We're like really seeing deeply how that dream went to work on their life and really affected them in such a way that, you know, they're deeply grateful for whatever that is that came to them in the dream to really shape their lives in the way that it has. I'm pretty sure you'd agree with me on this, that I don't even know, you know, what my life would look like if 17 years later, like, the dreams hadn't just kind of erupted in my life in the way that they had, that put me on this path. It's just like, to think about everything that I've been given by my dreams every step of the way, it just like doesn't make any sense that everybody's not doing this.
I completely agree. And I remember when I first started doing dream work, it was literally an overnight thing. One day I wasn't dreaming, the next day I was. And it's all due to a book I picked up by David Fontana called The Secret Language of Dreams. And I still recommend that book as an introductory book to anybody. And I thought, wow, this is absolutely fascinating. And I followed up with a Robert Moss book and then a Jeremy Taylor book. And then I read Jung's Memories, Dreams, and Reflections. And I was hooked. And I can't imagine how my life would have been if I hadn't come into the dream world. I completely shifted everything. I left the field of cultural resources management. I was getting ready to retire anyways, but I decided I wanted to go into doing dream stuff. And I was motivated to a large degree by, without being a bother, excuse me, and without proselytizing, I wanted to share with other people the richness that I got out of dreaming. It's an incredibly rich experience. And I find the community of dreamers is quite a wonderful community to be interacting with. And it's just, it's both a pleasure and it's extremely meaningful to be doing this. And I, when I was doing the graduate work in psychology at Sonoma State, I taught some courses, regular university courses, the psychology of dreaming. And I also worked as a teaching assistant in a myth, dream, and symbol course. And my job aside from a variety of things, my main job as the teaching assistant was to run dream groups. And every semester, it'd be a new batch of students, and some were there because, oh, boy, I just love my dreams, and others were, I need to kind of round out my psychology education, and this course was convenient at this time, and it was 3 units, and that's what I needed. And so I had both hardcore believers and people who were ambivalent about what the dream world was for them. And one of my biggest pleasures in running the dream groups was when somebody would present a dream who really wasn't convinced yet, and we'd talk about it, and all of a sudden you could see a light come on in their face, and it was like, oh, I get it. Oh, my God, that means something. And all of a sudden, there was a convert, and it was a person seeing that, oh, dreams really do deeply affect us and have meaning. And it's got to be one of the most pleasurable experiences I had as a teacher, was to see this light go on in a student's face and their eyes when they grasped that, oh, the dream really has meaning to me in my life. So it's real positive to share this with other people and to have them have the pleasure of what dreaming is.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with that 100%. I mean, part of the reason why I do this is because I feel indebted to everything that my dreams have offered me, that I just had to find some way to like give back. And so that's absolutely like what this podcast is for me. And I, you know, this is kind of like a one-way street. Like I don't get to see the feedback per se. I mean, unless they really reach out to us. But I'm really hoping, you know, based on the analytics, that it is getting out to people. So I'm hoping that if people are listening to this without any understanding of their own dreams, that it is affecting them, and it's making them curious and showing them the value that they could potentially have, and really making them want to, you know, discover it for themselves. So I hope that's the case for all of you out there. I really do.
I think that there's an incredible value in even if one isn't trying to understand the dreams, but willing to acknowledge their existence and willing to get up in the morning and kind of run the dreams through the through their mind and through their experience and just feel for the dreams and to actually just go inside oneself and pull out something from there that is so deep and so profound and meaningful. And whether anyone takes it somewhere or not, I think dreams have an effect on us regardless of our acknowledging them. So I think the more we acknowledge them, the better the effect will be. But to just have people think about interior and what it is that's inside of them, as opposed to just what's going on in the outside waking world, and to have that experience of, you know, who I am, what my emotions are, and this is coming from me inside, and to take that look inside, I think that's really important.
Yeah, I agree, definitely. Which makes me want to come back to the dream that you shared with us. So, I mean, going through the loss of your beloved, I mean, how much did it mean for you to have that dream the day she was going to leave? I mean,
I was incredibly taken by the dream. It seemed that all my dreaming experience and what I'd learned about dreams had come together at that point to give me that dream and for me to understand the deep emotional value of having it. And the dream, I'd say that dream, as much as anything, led me to accept what's going on and to understand that this experience of passing is, as paradoxical as it sounds, is a normal aspect of life. This is something we all experience, and people around the world have had birds in their dreams in relationship to dying, and I'm having that universal archetypal experience that people are having, and somehow the world is working right, and things are going to be okay.
Yeah, I would just assume, I mean, if it was my dream and it was my life and my experience, I just feel like I would be so deeply comforted that, you know, I wasn't feeling like I was going through it alone. Like, it would feel like, even if it is just coming from deep inside of myself, that there is that space within me, that soulful place that, you know, is assuring me that I'm connected to something deeper than just, you know, what I can see and feel and touch and all that. That this is a process that I'm not alone in. I think that's like a really special, beautiful thing.
I think that's a good way of putting it, that I'm not alone in it. In having that dream, I was aware that people throughout time have had this dream, and they will have dreams like this forever, and that this is the way of the world, and it is a natural thing to happen. Yes, it's extremely sad, it's extremely emotional, but this is the way the world is, and things will continue, and life will move on, and it's just a natural way of the way the world is.
Yeah. So I just wanted to stop this for a second and to really explore what it was that I was really trying to say, because I don't feel like I quite said it as well as I wanted to. So when I spoke about how beautiful it is to feel like our dreams come to us and allow us to not have to feel alone, what specifically I was trying to speak to there that I don't think that I communicated very well was that in these big moments in our lives, whether it be the loss of our loved one or whether it be, you know, going through puberty or having big breakthroughs in our life that largely go unnoticed by other people,
there are so many beautiful ways that dreams are with us in these moments that are largely uncelebrated or largely unnoticed, or in Christian's case, our society doesn't really know how to be with people who are bereaving the loss of their loved one. And so in these moments, we tend to feel really alone. So this isn't just in sad cases, but like I was saying, in cases where you're having big breakthroughs, or there are things to congratulate you on that you have done or overcome in your life, that the dream is there for you to pat you on the back or to give you a hug. And I think it's so beautiful to know that that, whatever that wisdom is, whatever that deep heart, whatever that deep soul is that is behind the dream, is always there with us. And it offers us these gorgeous, beautiful, truly meaningful dreams that assure us that we're not in this alone. That there is this part of us, or this greater soul of life, that is there with us, that sees us in it, and is coming close to commune with us in these moments, to either comfort us, to offer us solace, or to congratulate us and to celebrate us for how beautiful we are, or to remind us of how beautiful we are. Whatever it is that we need, the dreams always show up to let us know that there is something there deeper or greater than ourselves that sees us in our times of grief, or sees us in our times of unrecognized triumph. The world can't celebrate all of our little victories, but our dreams can. And this is one of the most beautiful aspects of dreaming to me, is that they are there with us.
Yeah, and I think in your dream in particular, I think it also really showcases like the beauty of that this is a natural process, and that there is beauty to have to behold within it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think that's such like a perfect such a perfect way that dreams do that, where they, even things that are hard or that we immediately assume are bad things that are happening to us. Typically, the dreams associated with those events that happen to us, there's often like an aspect of it that is kind of redeeming in that way, that it clarifies the beauty in it that we can kind of source from it.
Mm-hmm.
That maybe in our grief or in our bereavement of what's happening to us, that it gently helps us to kind of move back in the direction of seeing what's in it for us, as far as like that kind of redeeming quality to it.
Yeah, I find that the dream world has a as ephemeral as the dream world may be at times, it has a certain ability to ground us and to bring to our awareness of the way the world is and how it functions, and that really is okay. That even when it's not going the way we'd like, or we're having a bad experience, the dream is there and it accompanies us on that experience to help us along. It doesn't necessarily say that, oh, this is a good thing that's happening to you when it's a bad thing, but it is there to help you to understand it and to be able to move on and to grapple with a situation that may be difficult to grasp, or even it's impossible to understand why would this happen in my life. Some of the existential questions we have is, my God, why? How can life do these kinds of things? Well, I think dreams help us grapple with this, and it gives us a better understanding of what it is that we're dealing with.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that for sure. Yeah, because it, yeah, I mean, it doesn't sugarcoat, but it also doesn't, it doesn't in such like a tender way. Typically, I mean, sometimes dreams are just flat out hard, but I would say in situations like yours, there's, it doesn't shy away from the fact that this is a hard thing, but it also does give you something to lean on that is comforting. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like in your dream, we see the bird flying away, which is touching on the hard part of this, but there's so much more involved in that dream that helps you to lean on something that, that does bring comfort. And yeah, it's really, I just think that dream is, it's so short and simple, but it's so packed full of meaning for you. I'm just like really blown away by it.
I generally dream fairly short dreams. Every now and then I have a long one, but I'm over and over again surprised as to what can be packed into a short dream. And they can just unfold and unfold and unfold. And, yeah. You know, I've taken really short dreams to my dream group. I've been in the dream group now for same one. I've been in a variety of them, but I think this one has been going on for 12 years now.
Wow.
And, you know, I'll take a short dream to them and we start unpacking it. And you'd think that it would be kind of a quick process. Well, we can use every minute that we allocate for working the dream and go over and still not have finished unpacking a short dream, knowing that there's still stuff to find out when we're done with the dream. So it's the length of the dream is not necessarily in any way in relationship to the meaning and the information that it contains.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Sometimes I feel like the longer dreams that I have, because sometimes I have these like really sprawling ones, and it almost seems like those are the harder ones to even understand, because it's almost like, all right, well, there's a bunch of narratives happening here that don't seem to like work too well together. And it almost seems like the dream eventually like implodes on itself, and it's really hard to like be able to pull anything sufficient out of it, because there's just like way too much to even begin to know how to look at it.
I think it can be hard to find a focus in a dream like that. And right. I find that taking those kinds of dreams on a scene by scene basis is makes it a lot easier to grasp what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah, really. That's definitely the thing. Well, let's see. I was going to ask you if you had any final things that you would like to say in regards to Suzanne or the dream in particular, about how we kind of just went into that a little bit just a moment ago, but if there was some way that you wanted to just put a bow on top and.
Well, you know, I find whenever the dream comes up, and it comes up every now and then, I'm just taken by it as to what an absolutely wonderful dream it is. It just so succinctly has a beauty to it and a life energy that was just conveyed in that dream. And I'm really, it's definitely one of my most memorable dreams. And I'm just always impressed by what a wonderful dream it is.
Yeah. Well, I just think it's so fascinating that I've been wanting my dreams to like help inform the podcast. And so this was like one of the first real ways that that happened. Being given that dream that really gave me the kick in the pants to reach out to you finally. And I'm so glad it did, because this has been just a really sweet story. And I'm glad that we were able to get you on here and be able to share something this personal. So thank you.
Yes, I'm really glad to share this with you. And I'm also glad to just be able to have a nice conversation with you.
Yeah, I know. It's been quite a few years that we've been kind of passing each other in the halls, so to speak.
yes, absolutely.
that's funny. But yeah, well, thank you again so much for sharing the story and for sharing the life of Suzanne and your dream. I really appreciate you being here. And yeah, just a big thank you from Jason and I.
Well, you're most welcome, and I really enjoyed doing this, and I look forward to when I see you on Facebook. Oh, I'd like to make a plug for my page on Facebook, the California Dreaming. Yeah, the California Dreaming page. There's all kinds of California Dreamings, but mine is strictly about dreams and related things. And anybody that wants to hunt up California Dreaming or hunt up my name, Christian Gericke, Gerike, is welcome to do so on Facebook. And I'd love to have people join in on California Dreaming.
Yep, it's a great group. A lot of awesome conversations happen on there. I'm a part of the group, and I need to be more visible in that group, I think. But I always appreciate reading the posts when I see them come across my feed.
Your comments are absolutely welcome, and I try to post regularly. I have quite a few pages, different pages, actually, IASD, California Dreaming, and some others. And what I seek is not so much what I've got to say, but people's responses to what my posts are. And it does lead to some very interesting conversations. And it's, you know, this stuff can be a lot of fun. And that's one of the ways I like to pursue it. There's a lot of meaning to it, and it can be profoundly deep and emotional, but it can also just be a lot of fun to do.
Christian Gericke, thank you for giving us so much we can put to use right now. Like how dreams can pack so much into one scene or image, like the image of the bird about to take flight in your dream. How dreams prompt us to look within ourselves and cultivate our inner life and help us know our own truth. And that dreaming is a spectrum of experience ranging from conventional and knowable to totally far out and completely mysterious. But one thing Christian said may stick out with many of you as it did with me. It only takes one time where you really get a dream's meaning and message to open the floodgates. Dream life gets real interesting and intense really fast. I've seen it happen many times. And 30 years ago, that was me. 17 years ago, that was Steve. And that was once Christian. When will it be you, if it's not already? If you want to wake up tomorrow with a way of getting into your dream, to really get to its meaning and message, I suggest that you go to our website, dreamsshapeus.com, and check out my book, Rat Owl's Crash Course in Dream Interpretation. It will help you to open the floodgates.